There it goes.
Yeah, set it right over there. Here we are. We're recording. Episode 14 of The Underdogs. We're back.
Welcome, listeners.
Yep, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. For those of you that might not have heard the show before, I don't know if I've ever done a little reintroduction, but our show is about brewing and not specifically trying to find the best deck necessarily, or
win,
or trying to, like, you know, crack the format, but we're trying to play the bench warmers.
That's right.
We're trying to find those little dollar box gems that are hanging out that nobody's given any love to, and throwing them in a deck, and, you know, throwing the deck up against the wall a little bit, and seeing what we find out. Seeing what sticks, if anything. Sometimes stuff sticks. Sometimes it don't. But we have a lot of fun doing it. Because you know what? You gotta not mind losing in this game. For the sake of experimentation. For the sake of science.
It took me a while to learn that. Because I've been so competitive in other athletic events.
That's true.
But now I have learned that. And I love to just have fun.
I always heard stories about your tantrums at indoor soccer. But I don't think I ever saw you play a game.
Probably a good thing.
My sister used to say that she would go to your soccer games just in hopes that you would get really mad and, like, do something entertaining.
Yeah. Well, if you went to one of the games, there was always entertainment at hand.
Did you ever just clock somebody in the face? Was there ever anything to that extent?
Yes.
Awesome. Many?
Yeah.
Did a whole fight
I've
start?
Been clocked,
usually,
I've clocked.
Or was it just like punch, referee?
There've been both. There've been some real bench clears. I got knocked out one time from some guy blindsided me.
Wow.
Like, hit me in the temple and just knocked me out cold for a minute. I came to, though. I was ready to go. I came to.
That's intense. It's a good thing you didn't have any brain damage, I guess.
I'm good.
As far as you know.
A good fight will do you good, people, listeners.
Is that right? I've never been in a fight. Probably the closest I've
been.
Get
your blood boiling a little bit.
Well, that's true.
Feel alive.
Probably the closest I've been has been at shows. Like, maybe if I was at a hardcore show or something. Those people that think they own the place just because they want to do their, like, hardcore dancing, you know? But, like, I paid the same amount as you. We all paid. It makes me so mad if they try and push me out of the way so they can do their thing. I don't care. You enjoy it however you want. But if you're gonna try and like move me or other people, I just get livid at that. And I remember once, you know, they used to do this thing, right, where all of the hardcore kids that would wanna do their dancing would get in the they'd kind of get in the middle of some people and circle up, all facing each other, and then they would push out of the circle and basically like spread the crowd outward.
Oh, okay.
But I knew this was a thing that happened, and so I was keeping my eye out, and I saw him circling up. And so I remember, like, I was just bracing myself right before they did it. You know, I put one leg back and, like, had my forward knee bent, and I was just totally planted. And I was like, I am ready for you guys. You are not going to push me anywhere. And they shot outward in their circle like they always do, and dude just hit me like a brick wall. And I was just like, that's right, brother. But then it turned into this back-and-forth thing, and I don't know, I was probably 5 or 6 years older than everybody there, and I, you know, eventually I'm just like, you know what, I should just leave. This is silly. I'm going to end up getting into a fight with a 16-year-old and going to jail. I don't know. I just feel like an idiot, so I'm like, I'm just out of here.
Stupid things that I've been involved into. But there is a sliver of that moment that you really do enjoy.
There always is. You know, it's a primal thing. But we don't want to actually get in fights
Speaking
or hurt
primal,
anybody. We want to
red black.
Yeah, we want to just cast these magic cards that hurt people. Oh, actually, before we get into it, I have a little bit of a story. I went to my second ever GP recently, GP Louisville. That was won by what was it, Brian
Bronduin.
Brian Bronduin, yeah, with that mono black deck. I thought that I was just gonna get crushed, right? So I because I had my second loss by round four. Mm-hmm. It was 9 rounds. But I showed up, and to my surprise, I had a bye. I didn't know. I didn't think I had, like, played enough large tournaments to have any byes. But I had round one bye, so that was cool. I was playing green-white aggro just because it was a deck I'd played once before, and the night before testing with, I went down with like six other people and a variety of decks. And it seemed like about 50-50 against, you know, it was like anything, was possible. I never felt like I was crushing anything, but about 50-50. So, sleeved it up, went to the GP with it, and like I said, got my second loss by round four. And so it was kind of like, ah, whatever, you know, I'm here with other people, so I'll keep playing. Didn't really expect much. But then I just kept winning. So I was 6-2 going in the last round. And, of course, it's so stressful because unlike a Star City Open or something, you're not like, well, you know, if I get one more loss, I could still like, get $50. And, you know, there's not really that cushion. Mm-hmm. It's just like trying to make day two. If I get another loss anywhere within these next five rounds, you know, it's kind of just all for nothing and I'm out. So each one was more stressful, like every round as I kept winning. And so I was six and two, I had my winning in, and I go and look at the pairings as they're scrolling down. And of course, I'm paired against Josh Utterleighton.
What was the immediate thought when you saw that you were paired against Raptor?
My immediate thought was, seriously, you're 6-2?
Why are
you're like one of the best in the world.
Yeah, he's.
And I'm sure he came in there with three buys.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's round nine.
He won three matches.
Round nine, three buys. I'm like, how are you 3-2, man? Come on. Like, I know you're awesome. I don't want to have to play you right now for this winning in. Like, although he did, in a feature match earlier that day, beat my friend Ian that I rode down there with. So I knew what he was playing. I knew he was on Esper control. And I knew that my matchup against him was at least decent, green-white. And I'm usually not rattled by, like, playing against, you know, a pro player or anything, but I do bear in mind that, like, okay, well, this guy's probably not going to mess up,
yeah.
So I better keep my head in the game, or at least he's going to play a lot better than most people would. I did win game one, so I was feeling pretty good about that, but, you know, those guys know what they're doing, they come prepared, and he had a good sideboard against my deck. I pretty much...
Verdicts, I guess, were pretty good against you.
You know, Verdict isn't as much of a problem, because I have Experiment 1, if I'm Monstrous Fleece Mane Lion, it's indestructible, there's Boon Satyr and Advent of the Worm that had Flash. What really balances it, though, is he's got, he had Soldier of the Pantheon, which blocks just about every guy that I have. And so that makes it to where I kind of have to start going wide, it makes him more vulnerable to Verdict. And he hit Soldier, I think, was the sideboard card, but he hit really well games 2 and 3 off of his Ashiok, you know, like Ashioked me and flipped like a voice and a one drop, and you know what I mean. Just so he was able to just cast a bunch of blockers off of my deck and had all the time that he needed to start.
He just plus Ashiok for a little bit and then take a dude. Out of the exile.
Well, if he got something good, I mean, if he hit a Voice Resurgence, he would just take that, cast that the next turn, you know, if I couldn't cast his Ashiok, or if I couldn't kill his Ashiok. So that's what happened game two, and I mean, right there, he's got two extra blockers. So, you know, Soldier and Jace give him the time he needs, and then if I try and go wide to break through that, he's got Supreme Verdict, but so... I mean, because I beat blue-white control earlier in the day, and that felt like a pretty good matchup, like as far as in green-white's favor. But the addition of black in Esper control really tilted, you know, because he had the Doom Blades and the Hero's Downfalls to just one for one my guy. Like he had more than just the Supreme Verdicts, and like I said, Ashiok was really good. I guess really the mana is the only risk in that deck, but. It's not too terrible, and I mean, it definitely just has, like, a big pile of powerful spells, but it was still a great time, and I enjoy playing top-notch players, you know, even if, like, it's just kind of fun to, like, to play those matches and to sort of be tested that way.
Player.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, Ochoa was just looming in the background, not saying anything, he's just kind of...
Does he ever say anything?
Awkwardly, lankily looming, lankily... is a word. Okay, so let's get into it here. We are beating down this week, this episode, and I would say the main inspiration, this was pretty much your deck, Andrew. The main inspiration was Exava, right? Was that primarily the card you wanted to tinker with?
We both wanted to play her for a while.
Yeah, she's fantastic. At least in a vacuum, I think.
Yes.
Looks like a very powerful card. So what do we have going on here with Exava?
Well, we got our Unleash the Beasts. We got some Cacklers, we got Chainwalker, and Flailer. And they all have the Unleash mechanic.
Right, Unleash, so they can enter the battlefield with plus one counter, which means they can't block, but with Exava, they have haste. So it kind of course you want to play, you know, your one and two drops on that turn, but if you play them later game, if you have an Exava
right,
in play...
Right, so bad. Like, Cackler is usually so bad late game, but he's not so bad.
When they can come out of nowhere like that, then it... it's a lot more for the opponent to worry about, I guess, and they can potentially pressure Planeswalkers more.
Being able to play a Hellhole Flailer and possibly, like, win with it the turn you play it if you have an Exava out.
I think Hellhole Flailer, he was, like, my favorite card in that, in Return to Ravnica Limited. I think he's a good choice as far as providing just a little bit of extra reach, you know, because there are sometimes these, like, red-based aggro decks get to a point in the game where you just can't punch through, you know, and he is a potentially a very powerful tool for that. So we're pulling Hellhole Flailer out of the draft box. So the numbers on that.
Start with our one drops.
Sure. There's four of those Rakdos Cacklers. Also playing four of Fire Drinker Satyr, the updated Jackal Pup.
Ah.
What do you think about this guy?
I like him. I like that he pumps. I like that he has no terrible drawbacks. I mean, his only, what is it? Every pump you take a damage.
Yes, and then if he takes damage, then you also take that much damage, just like Jackal Pup. I like the fact that if your draw is a little mana heavy, that you do have this mana sink with with the Fire Drinker, you can get in just a little bit extra damage. So those are our one drops for Fire Drinker Satyr. Four Rakdos Cackler. Four of the aforementioned Gorehouse Chainwalker. 3-2 for two mana. Kind of, I was a little bit surprised, like, the first time I saw this guy in Constructed List, just because I wasn't thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a perfectly fine threat, if you've ever, like, played against him or had him in your deck.
Yeah, he's beaten me in a few different matches in Standard.
And then, of course, we're playing Ash Zealot. He's kind of ubiquitous right now in most of the red-based aggro decks. We're not doing any Devotion. I guess, you know, we could think about Fanatic Amogus in the sideboard or something. But for now, Ash Zealot's just a reliable 2-drop, 2-2 haste, first strike. He sees a lot of play right now. He's not so much of an underdog, but he just kind of fills the role that we need for this deck.
Mm-hmm.
There's four of him, three Hellhole Flailers, that we
didn't
talked about.
We missed our last two drop at the bottom there.
That's actually what I was moving on to.
Oh, okay.
So the new legend from Theros, Timuret.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen this guy, or had a chance to play with him, what a foreboding.
It's an ominous name.
Yeah, what a foreboding name. The Murder King.
So wait, you mean that
sounds
really good at murdering?
It sounds so,
yes. Yes,
so close to Burger King that you almost think that's what you heard.
Timuret the Burger King.
Timuret the Burger King.
I like that. Can we call the deck Burger King?
Burger King? No, I'm not on board for that.
Okay.
Nope. Thumbs down on the Burger King as a name for this deck. So he's a bear in terms of his stats. Red black for a 2-2. You can pay a red and one, sacrifice another creature to deal 2 damage.
I think it is just player.
I actually need to look this up to make sure. Of course, we're reading this off a list. We don't have the cards in front of us at the moment. Let me just make sure that that's what's going on with this guy.
I think it is.
Yes, it's a target player. You can also pay a black and one and sacrifice a creature to return Timuret from your graveyard to your hand. This is another way that you can get a little bit of reach if you're kind of... You know, if the game went late, we weren't able to get an early kill. I guess the thinking with this guy is that your low drops that might not be able to break through on attacking, you can just use them to bring back Timuret, and then the more creatures you draw, you can just fling them at the opponent. I think as an added bonus with him, too, you can use creatures in the early game potentially to throw at Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
If there's no other way you have to interact with them, or if they have blockers. And then, of course, the kind of main card we wanted to experiment with in this deck, Exava. We have three of her. 4/4. Well, she's 3/3, but with Unleash, becomes a 4/4 first strike haster.
I think it's a really insane curve when we hit it.
I agree. If we can go Fire Drinker, say, I mean, you know, in the upper, you know, just like the getting lucky games,
mm-hmm.
going Satyr into Chainwalker or Zealot into Flailer into Exava seems pretty great. On to the non-creature spells. Why don't you read off what we got there?
We have 4 Lightning Strikes.
Well, just kind of the current
one in red,
burn spell.
3 damage. 4 Magma Jets. 2 damage and Scry. And
a
then
reprint from Fifth Dawn. This card
is it Fifth Dawn?
It is Fifth Dawn, I believe. This card
I love Magma Jet.
Hasn't seen as much play since being reprinted as I expected it to.
Yeah.
When I saw it. This was kind of one of those.
I think just playing in Limited, though, I mean, we always knew how good it was. It's still excellent in Limited, obviously.
And it's seen its play in, like, in Modern, in, like, those red, white, blue decks. I don't know. What do you think the reasoning is for that, that this card hasn't been as popular lately?
I think it's 2 damage. I think.
You think it just doesn't kill enough?
Yeah. But Scry is such a great. And that it hits players and targets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I like it. I think it should see more play, and maybe it will before time. I mean, what am I thinking here that at 3 is so good? I mean, like, your green-white deck, like, Magma Jet would suffer.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it could kill, like, the Soldier of the Pantheons, and maybe the Experiment ones.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, maybe Boon Satyr, but, you know, he's got Bestow, so it's certainly weaker in that kind of matchup. Yeah, and perhaps that's why maybe it just doesn't kill enough.
But he also gives us the reach that we need late game.
Yeah.
And we need the extra 2 damage.
And, of course, getting any kind of library manipulation in red.
Yes.
Is really good.
We need it.
The last spell we have is definitely. I don't think this is one that people are going to see coming.
This card's Bangarang. I think we're going to win some games off of this card.
This could be a blowout. We have 3 Coordinated Assault. If you haven't encountered this card in Theros Limited, let me just look it up so I can read exactly what it says. I'm pretty familiar with this card though. I tend to pick it higher than most, I think. Okay, so 1 red mana instant. So the price is right. Up to 2 target creatures. Each get +1/+0 and gain first strike until end of turn. I agree. I really like this card in this kind of deck. I mean, so often the difference between a win and a loss when playing this kind of red-based aggro deck is when your opponent lays a 3 toughness guy, you either have to, like, attack all in and sort of get abyssed, you know, every turn. Or you have to just attack with your one guy that can trade with it. This card for only 1 mana could potentially, you know, put us in a position that we can just smash with our whole team, even if they have slightly bigger guys on the other side. And I would almost guarantee that until we cast this, they are not going to know what is up.
Yeah.
I really do not expect people to sit back and, like, well, maybe he's got Coordinated Assault.
I think we'll be able to really play with some people with this card. Just in combat, we're looking a little defeated. Swing. And we drop the old assault.
Ah, yeah. That's always good when you can mind game it a little bit.
I think this will be a good mind gamer.
Actually, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I was drafting last night at a store. Or no, 2 nights ago. And I did exactly that with this card. My opponent had made a 5/4 life linker. I want to say it was that Return Phalanx, the 3/3 where you got to pay a blue and 1 to. I don't know, he was like an Esper deck. He put a Hopeful Eidolon on it. It was 4/4 life link. He put a Scourge Mark on it. It was a 5/4 life link. And yeah, I had like a couple 2/1s. And I did the classic pick up your pin, you know, like you're going to take the damage. He was thinking whether or not to attack, and I picked up my pin, and he attacked. And I was able to double block and cast Coordinate Assault. And that really was the game, honestly. Wow. Like, if he didn't attack into that, I don't think I was getting rid of that creature.
Pick up the pin, but he's got to attack there anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think he can really...
I don't even know if he needed to pick up the pin.
I suppose you're right. He did hesitate for a moment, though. So whether I needed to or not, he attacked, and that, Coordinated Assault completely turned the game around.
That's sweet.
And really, one mana tricks I've found in any kind of aggro deck are really, really useful and kind of tend to have more of an impact than you expect them to, just because they have one mana, because, you can play a creature on the same turn or whatever. Actually, after the GP, that was one thing I thought, because I was playing, I think my non-creature spells in that deck were four Selesnya Charm, two Rootbound Defenses, one Unflinching Courage, and two Ajani's. And I really, after the GP, like, Rootbound Defenses, I just didn't need as much as I thought I would. I really was wishing that I had just, instead of the Courage and the two Defenses, played three God's Willing. Just being cheaper would have been all the difference. There were so many turns I had to make a decision between, like, leaving up Rootbound Defenses or, casting my Call the Conclave or whatever.
You know, I liked Rootbound Defenses for a while in the Hexproof deck, but then when they played, was it M14? No.
Oh, no, Dragon's Maze, Mending Touch. Is that what you're talking about?
Mending Touch. When Mending Touch got printed, I was like, oh, this is just so much better in this deck.
Right, because you only need to save one guy.
It was so much better. Saving the one guy was... It was paramount in a lot of games, just being able to save one dude with Mending Touch.
Yeah.
I played three or four on the board, and they were always good.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, if you're... when it comes to tricks, you know, when it comes to things for which you have to leave mana open... The cheaper, the better. Almost exponentially. So, that's our coordinated assault discussion. I'm really looking forward to that one. Of course, the mana, we got four ups on the dual lands, four Blood Crypts, four Rakdos Guild Gates. Are you concerned at all about the four comes into play tap lands? Or do you think we can manage that one?
A little, but we have to play the gates in this deck.
Yeah.
Mana's just too constrained not to.
Yeah, we don't have a ton of black, but we also don't want to play a ton of swamps. We're playing 10 mountains and 4 swamps. And this, we're kind of hedging a little bit on the Mutavaults. I know most mono-red decks play the full 4, because they're only single color. They don't have to play gates or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So we're running with 2 Mutavaults. There's no particular synergies with them in this deck. Mutavault's just good.
It's just good.
You know?
That wrath-proof dude.
Yep. So, the sideboard. What are we concerned about here in terms of the metagame? This is what this is what we're trying to zero in on in terms of the sideboard, because our main deck plan obviously is pretty straightforward.
We don't want our dudes to stabilize. We don't want to see Blood Baron.
Right. Blood Baron, I think, is one major concern. He's not all over the place, but he's commonly played. So, to take care of him, we've got 2 Mizzium Mortars and 3 Act of Treasons. I like this split, because I think if we were concerned just absolutely exclusively with Blood Baron, you know, we could just load up on the Mizzium Mortars.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that Act of Treason we can bring in just for kind of, you know, just for sort of whatever. Like, if we just think that it would be a good trick.
And we could be so far ahead in game 2 or 3 by the time Blood Baron comes down, and we just take it and win.
Yeah, and kill him. I also really love the fact that we have Timuret in the deck to add that extra synergy with Active Treason. I think that's why I like playing three of the Active Treasons in the board. Normally, that's the kind of thing you see in Limited, you know, the old Active Treason, Bloodthrone Vampire or something. But... It can be that much more of a blowout in Constructed, since singularly, you know, the cards tend to be more impactful. so that's kind of our anti-Blood Baron plan. We have 3 Doomblades, basically for Master of Waves, and for I think the, just the kind of green white decks
Smiter.
Or the yeah or the green based aggro Smiters. Decks or Polukranos decks and like anything like that. You know, we just wanna pay two mana, kill it. They're not in the main. Because not only can they not go to the dome, but there really are just a lot of black creatures running around nowadays. That mono black devotion deck is pretty big. And I think because of both popularity of Doomblade and Ultimate Price, like people are kind of trying to find where the sweet spot is in those removal spells. I think there's a real benefit to playing creatures that not only are black, but are also multicolored. So I feel pretty good about, like, in the current environment, playing Exava and Hellhole Flailer and Timuret. Because really, I mean, if, you know, if they have to get Heroes Downfall, I mean, you know, especially on the Flailer or the Timuret, up on mana or at parity with mana. You know, when they start having to use three-cost removal spells against a fast deck, you know, they tend to be behind anyway. So, three Doomblades in the board for those considerations.
Let me just say, I think Hero's Downfall is a well-designed card.
Yeah.
I think for the price, what you get, I think it's very good.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it's really soaring in popularity. What is it, like $15-ish dollars now?
It's expensive.
Yeah, it is.
But to be able to kill a PW, old P-Dub, solid.
Right. That's their fraternity name.
P-Dubs.
Yeah.
Two Hammer of Purphoros. Give your dudes haste. Is it two red?
It costs red, one. Yeah. Of course, the haste is a little redundant in our deck. A lot of our guys haste already, and with Exava, they haste. But the real reason we want this is to just be able to keep churning out dudes.
Cloth of Hammer, yeah.
In the matchups where they're going to have a lot of removal, or they're going to have sweepers. I like that Hammer of Purphoros gives you the ability to just, like, kind of not care. Mm-hmm. About Wrath, you know, you just throw your guys in anyway, and since it gives them haste, they're always going to get in one hit. And then after Verdict, you just start making golems, and it's a great weapon in the late game. So that's kind of mostly, you know, Esper matchup or any kind of grindy, controly sort of matchup. We've got two Rakdos Charms, a little bit of a catch-all, a little bit of just kind of a things we might not be expecting. You know, there is Whip of Erebos that uses the graveyard. So we can exile if we're fearing mm-hmm. that card. Of course, that's kind of a bad card for us anyway. I mean, we can also just destroy it because it's an artifact. Rakdos Charm shatters. So I guess whatever we would consider most advantageous.
We could fling all our guys with Timuret. And then we can Rakdos Charm them for not getting us very much, but getting them.
That's pretty cute, though. That's pretty cute. As just kind of a last way to mm-hmm. dome the opponent.
That would actually be quite... Let's just say you were at parity on board with dudes, five or six dudes, and you had six mana. You flunger.
If you, like, fling two of them.
You fling two, and then charm
and
them
and then hit
them
for
five.
Four, six, or whatever.
That's nine... It's not damage right there.
That's definitely a card that can come out of nowhere. And I like the Shatter ability also just for being able to kill those weapons. I mean, the fact that Whip gives all the opponent's creatures lifelink mm-hmm. Could make it a real problem for the deck. And, you know, some of the other weapons are being played. You see the Bident of Thassa.
Yeah.
And I've even seen the Bow in some sideboards. Be a good one for us to be able to destroy, too, since it can gain three life.
Yeah.
Gain three life every turn. We have two Mind Sparkers. You may not have seen this card around. I've seen it in a mono-red board or two. This is another one we're kind of just seeing if having access to it can be beneficial. So we've got two in the board. He's kind
two
of an efficient creature anyway, yeah.
Two red and one, he has first strike, and then whenever an opponent casts a white or blue instant or sorcery spell, Mindsparker deals two damage to that player.
Right, and he's a 3-2.
Three,
so
two.
You can play him pre-combat and kind of have some amount of defense against Azorius Charm.
Yeah.
Good
body, first strike.
They take damage if they want
to
counter a spell, if they want a Sphinx's Revelation. I mean, there are a lot of times when the control player hits that Sphinx's Revelation that kind of turns the corner in the game, that it's real dicey. It's really on the edge that 2 damage really could make all the difference. So we will see if Mindsparker is able to do some work for us. And the last card on the sideboard is one single Dreadbore, which is also a little bit of a catch-all. It can kill big guys like Pelucranos, or maybe, you know, if they're playing like an Archangel of Thune or something like that, and can kill Planeswalkers, which, you know, with a faster deck, a bunch of Hasters, I think we're already pretty decent against Planeswalkers, but it's almost like a fourth Doomblade that can have just this little extra bit of flexibility. No Thoughtseize in the sideboard is one thing.
It would be so hard to play Thoughtseize on turn one when we want to play it.
I think so. And I think it's... I don't know. I always hate phrases like this. Because it's sort of vague, but it kind of just feels like not what we want to be doing. No. You know, if we cast it early,
I agree.
It ties up our mana.
We want to get for casting our 1 and 2 and 3 drops. In the first 6 turns.
Yeah. And if we top deck it late... I mean, I don't know. Are we concerned about resolving like a...
I would never play Thoughtseize.
You know, a Gorehouse Chainwalker, you know. So Thoughtseize decided not to include it. So...
And now we're going to get crushed because we didn't play Thoughtseize.
yeah, we're going to just be wishing we had Thoughtseize this entire time. But this is what we got. We're going to go out and throw this one up against the wall and see if Ixava can run through the maze... And
I hope she
punch our opponent square in the nose, like Andrew playing soccer.
Oh, bringing it all together here.
Yep, bringing it all back. You got any other thoughts? Any further?
No, we've been talking about this deck for a while. I'm just excited to play it now. And
yeah, and we've been a little bit delayed
in a while, so I'm just excited to play again.
Yeah, what have you been handling the kiddos a little bit?
Yeah, been pretty busy with school. Really, we only have about 5 weeks of school left, though, in the semester, so things have toned down a little bit.
How do you think most of your students would react to you getting into a fight at the soccer game?
Oh, my gosh. That's...
Would they be surprised? Would that surprise be pleasant, or would it be disappointing?
Well, yes, because I'm a very different person outside of soccer. With soccer, there's just this rage that wells up in me when I play.
Like most people when they're driving.
Yeah, and yes.
Yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, they would be very shocked to see me act that way. But not even in soccer games now, I don't really act that way anymore. I'm much more calm.
Hmm. Oh, did you?
I would really hate to see my students see me in that light, or even my own kids, for that matter. Like, now that I'm the father, getting away from those bad moments.
Oh, that's mellowing out, I guess. Yes. And you start backing into parking spaces.
That's right.
When you have kids.
I'm a very good driver. Very good driver.
Are you?
Yeah.
Man, I can't parallel park to save my life.
Really?
Still.
I'm
so bad at it.
In St. Louis, so I'm used to it.
When I had that apartment downtown, I would like try and practice parallel parking because there'd the spot like right in front of my door. I could have parked another just like 20 feet down the block, but that spot right in front of my door was, you know, I said a parallel park, and there were some nights I would give it like 5 tries, and then I'd just be like, "Well,
you are an Asian woman.
Ain't happening. I guess I'm parking over there."
Sorry,
you know,
Asian
it's only
lady.
Parking though. I'm a bad parker, but I'm a pretty. I can do some tactics when it comes to driving. I mean, I've done some dangerous maneuvering, maybe from my experience as a pizza delivery driver.
Oh, okay.
But parking not so much. That is a real weak spot for me.
I'm an excellent driver. Excellent driver.
Oh, did you see Ender's Game?
No, I haven't seen Ender's Game.
I saw it last night. It was fine. I mean, I'm sure you read it.
Yes.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, adaptation, you don't expect to see everything. I would say the main impact and like sort of thrust of the story came across. Maybe they should have spent a little more time in the battle school,
yeah,
and a little bit less time in some of the on some of the other aspects. But overall, I'd say it was fine. It was worth watching. It's probably not the best like adaptation that could have possibly been made. You know, it's not like a.
I'm gonna be honest. I never loved the book. I liked it. But
sure. Yeah. It was okay. It was okay.
Joy, like it was to other people, and reading the entire like Orson Scott Card series, I just. It was just okay. It was almost the cheat ending that I never enjoy in books, and then he woke up. That's kind of how it felt.
Well, I didn't read the whole series, so I don't know. I just read Ender's Game. I don't know.
Well, that's how the end of Ender's Game feels to me.
Sure, yeah.
And Ender.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to be all. Unless you got any other thoughts?
No.
All right, well, we're going to be about it. I guess maybe we're going to get back to watching the Vintage Championships here. That's all right now. That's what we're enjoying. All right. Have a good...
Ingot tour.
Have a good week, y'all.
Yeah, I never did that care for it.